I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews, my co-host Mark Cox, and the recently returning Carl Middleman is back fresh from Canada, and we're going to hear about his entire trip. But, dude, I thought of you because I think of you often, but I thought of you during the incident of Trump's assassination attempt. I thought, oh my gosh, would Carl even know? Can he get a cell signal? Dude, where were you when you heard about it?
We were at dinner, and we have very limited cell service there. And so I said, all 11 of us were around the table, and I said, there was a shooting at the Trump rally. And everyone's like, you said that so nonchalantly.
Yeah, really.
And I'm like, well, because I don't know anything. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I think he got hit. And then everyone then pulled out their phones and we're going to as many news sources as we could get with our limited cell service because it's only Wi-Fi. And then once I said that,
everybody
in the room got online. And so it slowed everybody down.
Wow. Oh. Well, it's one of those things. Like I remember when Ronald Reagan got shot, exactly where I was. I was in high school. I was at track practice. We used to have something called the Fat Man's Relay, Bo, because I threw discus.
Why do you mention me?
I threw discus and shot put, because I know you're looking at me thinking you didn't run track. I threw discus and shot put, and we were out there practicing when somebody ran out and said Ronald Reagan just got shot. I mean, wow. Even back then, I was a huge Ronald Reagan fan, so we all ran into the school and found a TV so we could watch some of the coverage. But it's one of those rare moments where it's going to be etched in the history books the way this happened, the epic way in which Donald Trump reacted to it. I mean, I heard Dana White say this week, the UFC, I heard Dana White say a lot of people claim to be tough, but when you find out how tough you are is once you've been punched in the face, and Donald Trump is an absolute badass. His words, not mine, and he believes that. I mean, it's the way he recovered from that. That picture of Donald Trump with blood streaming down his face and his fist held up in the
defiant air,
and that American flag flying in the background is iconic, and it's going to be in the history books. Kids 50 years from now are going to be reading about that incident and look at that picture.
It is. It was a frightening moment because nobody really knew. Of course, with these phones, though, it's amazing. There was even a gal behind Trump when it happened that she was holding a sign and the shooting happened. Next thing you know, she's got her phone up like there's an episode of Black Mirror called I think it's called White Bear. And these people and that's what you see in the news anymore. When there's something going on in a crowd, everybody's got their phone out instead of running for cover or, you know, doing something. It's actually quite shocking, the human condition that we are in right now. Everybody just wants that Haktua, you know, moment and get their video sold or you know, get monetized. It's just the whole thing is crazy. And Butler, Pennsylvania, I mean, if their law enforcement was faulty in this, I mean, you picture a town of 5 or 6,000 people, you think small town, Barney Fife kind of law enforcement. When you got the president coming to town, you're going to have to call your Uncle Earl to be part of the, you know, security team. It was just insanity.
Yeah, well, speaking of which, as part of the show today, we are going to talk to a gentleman whose company specializes in preparing police departments, private security, things like that for big events, security details, the like. And he's going to kind of break down where he saw the flaws in what they had going on there in Pennsylvania. My guess is you won't see anything like that ever again unless there was more to it than we know, right?
There is more and more need for this specialized training. Remember, just a couple of months ago, we had Asymmetric Solutions on, and they're a local company that does this highly intensive, high security training and stuff. these companies are coming up left and right. And maybe it's law enforcement, you know, since a lot of people left law enforcement or leaving law enforcement, maybe that's their backup plan, is to help train Americans, civilians, to be able to protect themselves, their family and their businesses, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's amazing how many in that category are popping up all over the country.
Well, thank God the kid involved here, the 20-year-old, was an amateur. I mean, thank God. Yeah. You mentioned Asymmetric Solutions, and I know a bunch of people who've gone down there and trained. Some of them go down there because they've got a course where you can shoot long distance. This was not a long distance.
He got cut from the rifle team.
Well, in high school, but that was 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, clearly he could have improved his skill set since then. But there are people out there who could have been a mile away almost from this setting and maybe placed a shot. This kid was 130 yards. I know he was apparently rushed when he started firing, but he missed. And we're just, the hand of God is in here somewhere. I mean, I think Donald Trump was saved, honestly, on Saturday by a greater power, because I mean, there's just no reason from that distance that anybody couldn't almost close their eyes and hit a target with a rifle.
That's a really important point, because since this, and I've heard Donald Trump talk about God and his belief and faith, and people have questioned it. Since the incident, he's actually mentioned it publicly a couple of times, and you know, that's really the best witness of your life and what you're doing. If you can thank God, you know Jesus Christ. It seemed to work this time. My goodness. And everything involved with it, it just turning his head. And not only, you know, everybody talks about him turning his head, Mark, but when he does that, when he did that and looked at that screen that he was trying to point to, he not only turned his head, he kind of leaned forward just a hair enough. And we've all seen him on the podium, you know, at rallies and stuff. And he does that a lot. He's moving around a lot, which is honestly his best asset. And who knew that this move would save his life. And I think I saw one graph, and I don't know if you saw this, that there were actually two shots that possibly hit his ear.
No, I didn't see that. I just know that you see him grab it, he drops to the ground, and regardless of how it happened, it was just a miracle that he's not dead.
Truly.
And, you know, honestly, I heard it's a guy named Scott Jennings, who's a commentator on CNN. They put him on there as a Republican commentator. And there aren't many of those on CNN. And he pointed out that while Joe Biden has arguably had three of the worst weeks of any presidential candidate ever post-debate, Donald Trump's had three of the best weeks as a presidential candidate. Not that what happened to him was good. An attempted assassination is not good, but his reaction to it is what elevated that to raise his position in people's minds. I think it created maybe a new respect or for people, you know, that saw how he responded to that. And I think we're going to be reading about this for years to come, and hopefully find out a lot more about how in the world something like this happened.
That's right. I do want to mention this segment has been brought to you by Razorback Armory and DePere. If you're looking to arm up or suppress a firearm, check them out, razorbackarmory.com. But they're just a half mile east of 270 on Manchester, and tell them I sent you in. Okay, Mark, what do we got next?
All right, coming up, we're going to talk to our friend Tim Boyce. He runs a company that specializes in preparing communities, companies for, disasters, potential disasters. We're going to be back with more in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. Welcome back. The biggest story in America, without doubt, the past week is the attempted assassination of President Trump. up in Pennsylvania, and there and a lot of people have been looking at this Bo Matthews, and they've been, you know, from a very non-tactical background, questioning what went on up there. And I mean, I know I have, and I think some of it seems like common sense, but then there are people who are much better at all this than you and I. And that's what we wanted to do this morning. We wanted to find someone who's worked in this arena, who has looked at this and has some thoughts on maybe how this was handled by the Secret Service in combination with, obviously, they get local law enforcement involved when they have a speech like that by a big wig like the president or an ex-president or a presidential candidate. And we've got Tim Boyce on the phone, who runs a company called Critical Incident Response Training Services. CERTS is the acronym, and he helps train people and communities on active shooter situations and the like. And we're lucky to have him on the air with us this morning. Tim, welcome on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. So thank you for giving me some time this morning. I imagine, like most Americans, you are shocked by what happened last Saturday up in Pennsylvania. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, to be honest, I will start by saying that our country has never been more divided on a political spectrum. That being said, it's just unfortunate that now we think that we have to resort to violence to solve whatever issues the right or left may be having. I personally am of the belief that violence is never the answer, especially when it's in an aggressive fashion towards someone else for whatever your beliefs may be. That being said, it's unfortunate that situation happened. I wouldn't want to see it happen on either side of the political spectrum.
Of course.
And there seemed to be some sort of failure by not necessarily the government itself, but some sort of failure at the level of the security detail that was involved.
Yeah. You know, I mean, everybody's talking about, I mean, I played the soundbite. We probably should have queued it up for this interview, but it's the Secret Service director using part of the excuse that, well, this particular building had a sloped roof, and for security reasons, we didn't want to put anybody up there. But then in the aftermath of when the suspect in this case was killed, you see officers standing over the guy's body, and it's clearly not such a pitched roof that somebody couldn't have been up there or built a platform up there if necessary to provide security. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. The fact that they're saying that a sloped roof and they were concerned about potential injury to someone who was under the employment of the security detail, I think that's a bit ridiculous. If you are trained and if you have the ability, the athletic ability and the intelligence to be able to be a part of some sort of security detail, especially at that high of a level, a sloped roof should not be an issue.
It's absurd, actually. Tim, Mark, both of you gentlemen, I've got to ask you, this is one of those where were you when moments. I was sitting on my patio when I got a text from a friend of mine. Mark, where were you at?
I was driving home. We're in the middle of moving, and I'd just taken a load to my new house. And
gotcha.
I got a text from somebody that said, Trump just got shot. And, of course, immediately I tuned into to Fox News Radio to try to pick up the latest information on it. How about you, Tim?
Yeah, Tim?
I believe at the time I was actually at home. And I received multiple texts from people saying that, oh, my God, former President Trump was just had an attempt on his life.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what to believe necessarily right away until I start researching myself. So when I started scrolling and looking at different things, and it was pretty apparent from what I was reading and listening to and watching video-wise that, yeah, it was indeed an assassination attempt, which, I mean, when was the last time that even happened? Reagan?
Exactly. Yeah. And I do want to learn more about CERTS and what you guys do there. But can we all agree that isn't it weird that they haven't fuzzed out the actual impact of the bullet? You know how they normally in a shooting on reporting on the news, they always fuzz out the actual moment or the actual place on the video. They haven't done that with Trump. They just keep showing it over and over, and it's almost baffling to me. And the coverage has been so crazy with these, you know, dang boxes that we carry around with us everywhere. There's so much misinformation going on, even to the point where initial reports from the left media was he fell down at an event. It's like, it's so mind boggling. What does search do, Tim? Do you train security for agencies or for private companies, things like that, that could help in a live active shooter situation?
Yes. So CERTS, or the business name is Critical Incident Response Training Services. It's a business that I run. And what we do is we provide training for police departments and armed security personnel, whether it be public security for a school or a hospital, church, or even private security for a corporation. We train them on tactics and procedures on how to mitigate loss of life during an active shooter situation. But on top of that, we also provide run, hide, fight for civilian people, and we also do medical treatments, and we also offer site assessments for office buildings or churches or schools, and we can draw up proposals for how to mitigate risk management to the security of a structure.
Yeah. That's great. When we look at back to the shooting then for a minute, what they talk about sight lines and distances. I mean, 130, I think they said 130 yards or something like that, which is, you know, nothing for, I think this was an AR platform he was using, but a 30-06, I mean, a 30-30. I could think of a lot of guns that would be very effective at that range. If you had to manage that scenario, how would you have done it differently? Looking at what they did with that roof being as unguarded and as close as it was to the person in question.
I find it odd that the security detail didn't stretch out to that length. The reason I say that is like if I am in charge of a security detail involving especially a former president or even the current president, why you wouldn't have city blocks completely barricaded off to prevent heavy foot traffic and just regular normal car traffic from going through is beyond me. On top of that, I just don't understand how, let's just say, and I don't know all the details on how far the security from Secret Service standpoint stretched in that direction, but even with local law enforcement in that direction, how you didn't have anybody that had view on that building specifically, considering it was close enough to even get a shot off.
Yeah.
You mentioned, Tim, you mentioned
that. I really wouldn't even think that something like that would have been an issue, but apparently it was.
Yeah, Tim, you mentioned the local law enforcement, and you may know better than anybody with your background. When a Secret Service team comes in to prep a site or, you know, to scope a site, do they instruct, as your company does, do they instruct the local law enforcement? Because this is a town of 6,000 people, something like that. I'm thinking, you know, small town cops. Do they get briefed like this is the freaking president that is going to be in your town? Are they up to snuff, or is there not that communication in your expertise?
In my expertise, yes, that communication does exist, and local law enforcement should be and probably was supposed to be on the same page with all the federal agencies that were involved.
Mm-hmm. Right. Part of what they blamed is communication. And, you know, I don't know. My father-in-law was a sergeant with St. Louis County for many years and retired from there. And he was on several of these presidential details, including when Bill Clinton came to town. I remember specifically him talking about that. And, you know, they went to extraordinary lengths to make sure that rooftops were covered. And even from the local LEO perspective, they were in assistance with the Secret Service, but Yeah, I mean, he even told me stories, and I over the years I've questioned whether or not what they were doing was probably completely legal. But he said if they'd go back and look for people that had made any sorts of threats online, whatever, and they'd go have a good conversation with them right before the president came to town, and oftentimes the people might find themselves on a temporary hold for a couple of days in a jail cell just to make sure they weren't out running around when the president came to town. That wow. None of that seems to be what took place up in Pennsylvania. Maybe they've changed those tactics over the years. I don't know.
You know, I can't speak to whatever the tactics and procedures are for a former president, let alone a situation like that where you know there's going to be that many people involved and that former president is there as the running candidate for the Republican side. I can say, though, that when trying to put together a security detail, it's of vital importance that both the immediate and surrounding area needs to be secure from every square inch. I cannot fathom how this got missed, but communication is what's vital in that situation. Mm-hmm. Communication is key to everything when you're working between agencies, either at the local level or the federal level. If you're not communicating properly with each other, something is going to get dropped.
Yeah.
Tim, I'm not asking you to criticize the Secret Service, but did you have a perspective on the size of the agents that were at that incident? A lot of people have been talking about the DEI hires. The females were 5'3" to protect a 6'4" man. Is that something your company looks to when you're protecting an asset?
So if you're talking about protecting an asset, if it's in the immediate area around the person that you're trying to protect or whoever the group may be,
Yeah,
size is important. Yes, their skills are important. I believe the skills and the knowledge base is far more important than the size and strength of the individual. If you have the skill set, if you have the knowledge, and you have the confidence to do the job, your size should not matter.
Interesting.
Yeah, you mean skills like holstering a weapon?
Correct.
I know the video you're talking about. Yeah, no, seriously.
I'm not being funny. It's horrible. I was like, hold on, I can holster my weapon a whole lot. Because you do it so many times if you're training correctly. I was just baffled at that. Maybe it was nerves, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I imagine, how long has it been, like Tim mentioned earlier, since there's been an assassination attempt in this country? It was a first-time scenario for a lot of those agents. I mean, none of them have been on there long enough to have ever encountered anything like that before, right?
I mean, yeah, I would think that the people who were involved back in the Reagan era, they are either retired or they are at a higher position within whatever their job platform may be.
Yeah.
As for the way training happens now, I can't speak to that because I don't work for any federal agencies.
Right.
However, you would assume that there would be some sort of set standard across the board. That's not to say the tactics are not fluid and they cannot change on the fly. However, there needs to be some sort of blueprint for, especially when you're doing a site assessment, how you're going to handle any given situation that could come your way. And dropping an entire building with a person on the roof is unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that among the people who do this for a living, this is going to be torn apart over and over again. Congress is going to tear it apart. I've been a shooter myself for a long time, but I've never done like long range shooting, even though 130 yards is not long range. My guess is whatever was done here, major changes will be made from this point forward.
One would assume, yes, there should be some major changes made. Beefing up the security detail, for one, just to make sure that you have the amount of personnel you need to cover all those corners and to be able to search every square inch to make sure that those site assessments are done properly. Probably the biggest concern. Other than that, the biggest concern is the confidence in the people that you hire and also knowing that they have the proper mindset to do the job that they sign up to do. And again, communication. Communication between agencies is of utmost importance.
Tim, I want to just thank you so much for your time and your expertise. If somebody's listening to this this broadcast or the podcast of Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors and they want to get a hold of you, do you only work in the St. Louis region or do you work nationwide, and how can people get a hold of you?
For now, I work in the St. Louis region. However, I can go outside of that region. The goal long term is to be able to take this nationwide. but for now, I am working within the St. Louis region, and they can get a hold of me by visiting a website. It's www.certspro.com. That's C-I-R-T-S-P-R-O. And I can also be reached on my email at tboyce, T-B-O-Y-C-E, at certspro.com.
Very good. Tim Boyce,
that's great.
Thank you so much for your insight this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
You bet. Take care of yourself. We can all look at it with a critical eye at the end of the day, Bo. And we have, and we will continue to. But when you hear somebody that's been in the business and trains other people on how to do it with serious questions, I mean, there was a breach of protocol here that is shocking to the professionals that have looked at it.
Seems like a fine line between conspiracy and just a security breakdown. I don't know what's going on.
It does. It does very much. Like, how was that left open enough that somebody could carry a ladder in and crawl up there? People are yelling and pointing to the person, and yet he still managed to get shots off. I mean, so many questions remain about the guy's background, and I'm sure we'll be tearing those apart in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I'm anxious to hear from possibly the counter sniper guy that was on the roof that we all saw, that was next to Trump. I'm interested to find out all of the aspects of it. You know, they're seeing footage of an hour before Trump hit the stage, and I even heard that somebody suggested to Elon Musk and Tucker Carlson to raise their security around them, including Alex Jones, just because these are mouthpieces like yourself. You know, you need to up your security team,
and you know that there was a stated threat. There was a known threat to Donald Trump in the background of all of this, which makes it even more absurd, to be quite honest.
You're talking about the international threat.
Yeah, the Iranian threat. And the important moral of that story is, why were the Iranians wanting to target Trump? Because they benefit from Biden's policies. They did not benefit from Trump's policies. Just something to keep in mind there. All right, coming up, we get to the great outdoors portion of all this, Bo Matthews.
Need a break, brother.
Some fishing.
Yeah.
This Carl Middleman guy just got to do some great fishing.
I know where I was when I heard about the assassination.
Ooh, yeah, where were you?
In the fishing lodge.
We were at dinner at the fishing lodge.
Yeah, I'll bet. We're going to talk to Carl and a couple of his buddies that went along on that great trip when we come back on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Coming up to tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze.
I heard this song up in Canada.
I'll bet you did.
On the radio. I heard it on the radio.
Well, this would be the Great Outdoor portion of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Bo Matthews, Carl looks a little tired today. I can't figure out why.
Well, I can understand why, but it was a romantic fishing trip. I had no idea. This song is about a romance at the fishing lake. Holy cow.
It's the romance between man and fish.
Oh, that's what it is.
The romance between Carl Middleman and the Great Outdoors.
Dude, welcome back, man.
Thank you.
You were back. You were back like a few hours before you had to get back to work.
Yes. I went to bed, and then 5 hours later, I was at the Mark Cox Morning Show.
At the radio station. Yeah, no kidding. That's true. So you got to tell us a little bit about your trip, and you're bringing on some of your fellow fishermen.
Yes. We got Paul Herman and Tom Messmer. Tom, Paul, hello.
Welcome, boys. So nobody got lost this year, right? Tell me that. Did you bring a compass?
Tom, tell them about what you brought this year.
Uh-oh.
Oh, the new Garmin GPS?
Yes, please.
Well, I brought it, but it didn't really work out too well. So it's going back to the Bass Pro Shop this afternoon.
Oh, no.
It's got too many bells and whistles on it.
It does. And the Navionics app on the iPhone works better.
Wow.
Easier.
Yeah, that's you know, my experience in Glacier last year. We had an emergency, not for us, but for somebody else in a remote area, and I ended up using the satellite service through the iPhone to get to alert the Rangers to get somebody up there to help the guy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So this was Paul's first trip. Paul, what did you think of the trip?
It was just awesome. Never been to Canada. Never fished for walleye or pike or anything like that. It was so much fun.
Describe the setting for us, Paul, because, I mean, I've seen a couple of pictures that Carl's provided from last year, I think. But, I mean, you're just sort of out in the middle of the wilderness there, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. I had to portage from the first lake up to the second lake on a tram, I guess you'd call it, and then, I don't know, maybe a 25-minute ride to the camp across the lake, and they got the cabin set up and a lodge, three meals a day, and Art and Jenny, the owners, are just fantastic, and just water everywhere, islands everywhere. I'm glad Brett, my captain in our boat, knew where he was going because I thought Lake of the Ozarks was bad, but when you got nothing but green hills and islands that all look alike, it could be confusing if you've never been up there before.
Yeah, that's a great point. You don't really have points of reference that, like you might on a tree.
Right, a tree.
Tom, how long have you...
Beautiful water. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Tom, how long have you been going up to the Pipestone Lodge?
That was my 25th time up there in 27 years. We couldn't go because of that ridiculous COVID thing. but it's fantastic. The water's crystal clear. It's 150 foot deep out in front of the lodge. It's breathtaking, really.
In fact,
high cliffs, the tall pines, the fish, the wildlife. I didn't see any moose this year, or bear, but you know, I never really want to see a bear.
No.
In fact, one of our crew caught lake trout really deep, and it was huge. The fillet is as big as your arm.
Wow.
Wow. That's delicious.
Now, this is the setting up there where you bring the fish back and they'll fillet it up and cook it for you right there for lunch?
Tom?
Oh, absolutely. And I believe Paul experienced the shore lunch on Loon Haunt Lake.
That's the lake that has all of the walleye that you could ever imagine getting in one day. You limit out every time you go to Loon.
That's not a terrible thing.
No, it's not terrible.
Paul, what'd you think of Loon Haunt Lake?
Oh my God, it was fun, and the shore lunch was unbelievable. The little nook on an island, it's just so rustic. What a great setting, and just nonstop, you're catching something. It was fun. If you're not catching walleye, you're catching smallmouth, which just fight like crazy. And I've never caught smallmouth that big before, down here out of Ozark streams and everything. But it was just one after the other. It's just a blast. And morning was pretty good. We got done with shore lunch, and it was even better. We just started slaying them.
Yeah. Wow. So. Hey, Paul, since this is your first trip, who invited you? Was it Tom?
Tom, yes.
And how long did it take you to make that decision to go? Because I just was invited on a hunt for at the Ted Nugent property. It took me about 15 minutes to clear it through my wife, and she's like, you should do it. And I was like, I'm doing it. Did it take you long to decide you're going to do it this year?
No, it did not. He, in years past, Tom's invited me, and we just never kind of connected again because he's busy, and, you know, and then this year he goes, you're going. I said, okay. He goes, I'll send you a text. And he sent it. I'm in.
Yeah, I would have gone in a heartbeat. I'm in the middle of moving, unfortunately, so that didn't work out for me, but I definitely something I want to do. So about the lodge, Carl, it seems like we've had the owner of that lodge.
We've had Art on the air.
On the air before talking about this. This is a place that I'm sure you have to book it a year out, but it's a place that anyone could go up and take the trips, right?
Yes, that's true, except he is... This year has been fantastic for them. They've been sold out. They had, Tom, what did you say? He had 28 guests one week?
Oh, at least.
Sometimes
they have to bring in extra guides, so you even got to add more people to the camp.
There were 11 people in our group. There was a group of six, and then there was a group of two, and then there was a group of four. So, and you all see each other at breakfast or dinner. And then we share fish stories all day.
I'm sure. Do you get to bring? We talked about this. You get to bring the fish back with you?
We do.
You do. So you bring? They pack them in ice, dry ice, and you fly them back.
Tom, how'd you pack those up?
Yeah, they just pack them in regular ice. They're frozen. They're cleaned and frozen. They pack them in regular ice and put them in a cooler when you go back. When you get back into the States, if you're driving home, because you can drive there, obviously, you can stop at Border Bob's and pick up the dry ice you would need to finish your trip. But, yeah, they clean them. They freeze them. I've got some that haven't been frozen because we caught them yesterday before we left. And my wife informed me that we're having a fish fry tonight.
Nice. Wow. I did want to mention that Bo and I do not charge for fish fry appearances.
You will get an invite when we do one.
No, Mark's like the last kid on the dodgeball team getting picked. He's not invited to my hunt in Michigan. He wasn't invited on the fishing trip. Yep, he's that kid.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
Well, except that both you and Mark were invited on this trip and could not go.
Yeah, I know, because I'm in the middle of moving. I would have been divorced right now if I had decided to go fishing for a few
days. And Bo just went up to see Ted, and his wife's like, not again.
Exactly.
So guys,
good idea.
Here's what I get to do, and I'm going
to
be talking about this more next week on the show, but on July 30th, I am flying to Anchorage to fish for salmon in the Kenai River. I can't wait.
What?
Wow.
What?
Jealous.
Yeah.
So we actually talked about Alaska 2 days ago, about going to Alaska to fish.
It's my first trip up there. Like I was supposed to go during COVID, and it got canceled, and now I finally get to go. So I'm very excited about that. It's something I haven't done, and we're hoping to see maybe some bears and moose while we're up there going down the river.
Lazy yellow moon coming up tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze.
I heard this song up in Canada.
I'll bet you did.
On the radio. I heard it on the radio.
Well, this would be the Great Outdoor portion of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Bo Matthews, Carl looks a little tired today. I can't figure out why.
Well, I can understand why, but it was a romantic fishing trip. I had no idea. This song is about a romance at the fishing lake. Holy cow.
It's the romance between man and fish.
Oh, that's what it is.
The romance between Carl Middleman and the Great Outdoors.
Dude, welcome back, man.
Thank you.
You were back. You were back like a few hours before you had to get back to work.
Yes. I went to bed, and then 5 hours later, I was at the Mark Cox Morning Show.
At the radio station. Yeah, no kidding. That's true. So you got to tell us a little bit about your trip, and you're bringing on some of your fellow fishermen.
Yes. We got Paul Herman and Tom Messmer. Tom, Paul, hello.
Welcome, boys. So nobody got lost this year, right? Tell me that. Did you bring a compass?
Tom, tell them about what you brought this year.
Uh-oh.
Oh, the new Garmin GPS?
Yes, please.
Well, I brought it, but it didn't really work out too well. So it's going back to the Bass Pro Shop this afternoon.
Oh, no.
It's got too many bells and whistles on it.
It does. And the Navionics app on the iPhone works better.
Wow.
Easier.
Yeah, that's you know, my experience in Glacier last year. We had an emergency, not for us, but for somebody else in a remote area, and I ended up using the satellite service through the iPhone to get to alert the Rangers to get somebody up there to help the guy.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So this was Paul's first trip. Paul, what did you think of the trip?
It was just awesome. Never been to Canada. Never fished for walleye or pike or anything like that. It was so much fun.
Just describe the setting for us, Paul, because, I mean, I've seen a couple of pictures that Carl's provided from last year, I think. But, I mean, you're just sort of out in the middle of the wilderness there, right?
Yeah, it was awesome. I had to portage from the first lake up to the second lake on a tram, I guess you'd call it, and then I don't know, maybe a 25-minute ride to the camp across the lake, and they got the cabin set up and a lodge, three meals a day, and Art and Jenny, the owners, are just fantastic. And just water everywhere, islands everywhere. I'm glad Brett, my captain in our boat, knew where he was going, because it just, I thought Lake of the Ozarks was bad. But when you got nothing but green hills and islands that all look alike, it could be confusing if you've never been up there before.
Yeah, that's a great point. You don't really have points of reference that, like you might on a tree.
Right, a tree.
Tom, how long have you...
Beautiful water. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Tom, how long have you been going up to the Pipestone Lodge?
That was my 25th time up there in 27 years. We couldn't go because of that ridiculous COVID thing. yeah, it's fantastic. The water's crystal clear. It's 150 foot deep out in front of the lodge. It's breathtaking, really.
In fact,
high cliffs, the tall pines, the fish, the wildlife. I didn't see any moose this year, or bear, but you know, I never really want to see a bear.
No.
In fact, one of our crew caught lake trout really deep, and it was huge. The fillet is as big as your arm.
Wow.
Wow. That's delicious.
Now, this is the setting up there where you bring the fish back and they'll fillet it up and cook it for you right there for lunch?
Tom?
Oh, absolutely. And I've heard Paul experience the shore lunch on Loon Haunt Lake.
That's the lake that has all of the walleye that you could ever imagine getting in one day. You limit out every time you go to Loon.
That's not a terrible thing.
No, it's not terrible.
Paul, what'd you think of Loon Haunt Lake?
Oh my God, it was fun, and the shore lunch was unbelievable. The little nook on an island, I mean, it's just so rustic. What a great setting, and just nonstop, you're catching something. It was fun. If you're not catching walleye, you're catching smallmouth, which just fight like crazy. And I've never caught smallmouth that big before, down here out of Ozark streams and everything. But it was just one after the other. It's just a blast. And morning was pretty good. We got done with shore lunch, and it was even better. We just started slaying them.
Yeah, wow. So. Hey, Paul, since this is your first trip, who invited you? Was it Tom?
Tom, yes, yes.
And how long did it take you to make that decision to go? Because I just was invited on a hunt for at the Ted Nugent property. It took me about 15 minutes to clear it through my wife, and she's like, you should do it. And I was like, I'm doing it. Did it take you long to decide you're going to do it this year?
No, it did not. He, in years past, Tom's invited me, and we just never kind of connected again because he's busy. And, you know, and then this year he goes, you're going. I said, okay. He goes, I'll send you a text. And he sent it. Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah, I would have gone in a heartbeat. I'm in the middle of moving, unfortunately, so that didn't work out for me. But I definitely something I want to do. So about the lodge, Carl, it seems like we've had the owner of that lodge.
We've had Art on the air
before talking about this. This is a place that I'm sure you have to book it a year out, but it's a place that anyone could go up and take the trips, right?
Yes, that's true. Except he is. This year has been fantastic for them. They've been sold out. They had, Tom, what did you say? He had 28 guests one week?
Oh, at least.
Sometimes
they have to bring in extra guides, so you even got to add more people to the camp.
There were 11 people in our group. There was a group of six, and then there was a group of two, and then there was a group of four. So, and you all see each other at breakfast or dinner. And then we share fish stories all day.
I'm sure. Do you get to bring? We talked about this. You get to bring the fish back with you?
We do.
You do. So they pack them in ice, dry ice, and you fly them back.
Tom, how'd you pack those up?
Yeah, they just pack them in regular ice. They're frozen. They're cleaned and frozen. They pack them in regular ice and put them in a cooler when you go back. When you get back into the States, if you're driving home, because you can drive there. Obviously, you can stop at Border Bob's and pick up the dry ice you would need to finish your trip. But yeah, they clean them, they freeze them. I've got some that haven't been frozen because we caught them yesterday before we left. And my wife informed me that we're having a fish fry tonight.
Nice. Wow. I did want to mention that Bo and I do not charge for fish fry appearances.
You will get an invite when we do one.
No, Mark's like the last kid on the dodgeball team getting picked. He's not invited to my hunt in Michigan. He wasn't invited on the fishing trip. Yep, he's that kid.
Okay.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
Well, except that both you and Mark were invited on this trip and could not go.
Yeah, I know, because I'm in the middle of moving. I would have been divorced right now if I had decided to go fishing for a few
days. And Bo just went up to see Ted, and his wife's like, not again.
Exactly.
So guys,
a good idea.
Here's what I get to do, and I'm going
to
be talking about this more next week on the show, but on July 30th, I am flying to Anchorage to fish for salmon in the Kenai River. I can't wait.
What?
Wow.
What?
Jealous.
Yeah.
So we actually talked about Alaska 2 days ago about going to Alaska to fish.
It's my first trip up there. Like I was supposed to go during COVID, and it got canceled, and now I finally get to go. So I'm very excited about that. It's something I haven't done, and we're hoping to see some bears and moose while we're up there going down the river.
Pack a pistol.
Yeah, I plan on it.
Now,
don't worry.
We do want to mention that our Tom and my cabin was the party cabin most of the evenings, where we would make pizzas from Guido's. Even though we'd eaten fish all day and
yes,
a beautiful dinner from Art and Jenny, mostly Jenny, Tom brought a pizzazz, and so we would make pizzas, and every 20 minutes we'd have a brand new pizza from Guido's.
Wow, nice. Well, and some warm brown liquid to go with it, as in some good bourbon, I'm assuming.
Tom?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I figured Tom probably provided you with some of that. So, yeah.
Tom had the good stuff.
Yeah.
We brought some stuff you can't purchase in Canada very easily, you know, just they're just hard to find allocated, as you know. But, and then Art also pre-purchased some brown liquor for us because it just wasn't enough what you're allowed to bring, one bottle of liquor. And we had a great time. Everybody has a great time when we go on that trip. We had kids with us. We had another family that had two twin boys that were 15.
Oh, boy.
And when they come in from regular fishing, they're throwing lines off the dock. One kid threw his line right off the dock, caught like a 30-inch northern right there in the weeds.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Well, I do have a question about this trip. When you were up there, is there like any break time or for those people that are listening to this conversation going, man, I got to do this. How many hours a day are you out fishing?
Paul.
Carl, you probably fish the most.
I fished.
Yeah.
Paul, how often do you fish?
Well, me and Brett went out probably, you know, like 3 or 4 hours in the morning, come back for lunch. Then we go, you know, two and a half, three hours, whatever, after lunch.
Wow.
And we never really made it out in the evening. Then after dinner, we go out, and me and Brett kind of held down the fort a little bit, maybe sipping on the brown stuff. And then I went out with Tom the last day and caught a monster, in my book, a monster walleye. That was just awesome. So that's the only evening when I did, but three times a day, more or less.
But
how big was it, Paul? I mean, is it grown since you got back, or?
I can't lie because there's too many walleye fishermen up there that have caught 30, 31 inch, you know. So it was 27 and a half.
Nice.
I
did my best fishing at night. After dinner, we would go out again and troll for bass, and we caught 5 fish in 15 minutes. And then another 5 before we went in.
And what were you fishing with?
That doesn't sound like a lot, but Carl's not really a great fisherman.
Yeah.
So that is an incredible amount of fish for Carl.
I did. Ooh. And then the last day, we caught 14 fish before we left because we didn't leave until almost 4 o'clock, so we got 2 more sessions in.
Wow.
It was great.
Yep. Good stuff. Well, I tell you, Tom, Paul, thanks for giving us some great information on your fantastic trip up to Pipestone Lodge. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Great to be on this show.
You bet. Always our pleasure, gentlemen.
They're fans of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
P1, Carl.
And bourbon.
And bourbon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You bet. We'll talk.
Man, that's
soon.
Awesome.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know, Mark, can we just book it now? Can we just get on the books right now to go?
I want to go. I want to go next year. I just need a little more than a 3 or 4 day notice next time, Carl.
Yeah, Carl.
Yeah. It's my fault.
It's Carl's fault that we didn't get to go. Yeah, exactly.
We covered a lot on this show. Please share the show with your friends that are like-minded to support the Second Amendment and the great outdoors.
Have a great week and great weekend. We'll see you next time around on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
See you, boys.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.